From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? It is October 15th. That's right, hump day. Happy Wednesday, folks. And we are so glad, I'm so thrilled, you've allowed Current Sports to be a part of your Wednesday. We have a great show in store for you all. You'll get to hear from Dave Dombrowski himself. Yes, as Dave had a pretty long presser that lasted about an hour addressing the offseason moves that the Tigers may make or should make and so on and so forth. You don't want to miss that. We'll also talk about Jameis Winston being looked at for signing autographs. A Ryder Cup task force is in full effect. And with it being Wednesday, you guys know that each and every Wednesday we bring Barbershop Wednesday to you. And today's topic is a pretty interesting and intriguing one, folks. Should fantasy sports be considered illegal? Yeah, well, it's going to be an interesting discussion. You don't want to miss all of that and so much more, but as custom here on the show, here are your current sports quick hit headliners. Well, MSU, let's talk some Big Ten basketball, shall we? MSU checks in at third in the preseason Big Ten basketball writers poll. Michigan comes in at number five. The balloting was conducted by Bob Baptist of the Columbus Dispatch and Detroit Free Press U of M beat writer Mark Snyder and MSU beat writer Joe Rexroad also participated. So MSU third, Michigan number five. Do we agree with that? We'll also be discussing that later on in the show. All right, for the second time in 6 weeks, a Detroit Lion has won the NFC Defensive Player of the Week award. Linebacker DeAndre Levy won the award in week one, and on Wednesday, the league announced that defensive end Ziggy Ansah earned the honor for the first time after totaling 2.5 sacks and forcing a fumble against Minnesota on Sunday. Ziggy was everywhere. All right, the Detroit Red Wings, who are currently 1-1 on the season, take on the 1-3 Boston Bruins tonight at 8 p.m. at the Joe. Really surprising that Boston is 1-3. One of Boston's three losses came to Detroit in their season opener last Thursday. Now, the Wings are struggling for offense and are looking to get their power play going, while the Bruins, who are coming off a President's Trophy season, are looking to win their first since beating Philly in their home opener a week ago. The Pistons and Hornets are currently playing right now. This is Detroit's fourth preseason game of the year. We'll keep you updated on that score as the show ensues. The Pistons, some bad news concerning the ball club, though, considering the fact that the Pistons will be without shooting guard Jody Meeks for the next couple of months because of a stress reaction to his lower back. That's right, back spasms, folks, back spasms. All right, and former Detroit Pistons guard Chauncey Billups has been hired by ESPN to work as a studio analyst for the upcoming NBA season. Billups will appear on NBA Tonight, SportsCenter, NBA Coast to Coast, and ESPN Radio. He's going to be a busy man among other ESPN properties. Congrats to Chauncey. You can definitely see him on the airwaves. And how about this? Did you see this video, folks? NASCAR fine Brad Keselowski $50,000 and Tony Stewart $25,000 on Tuesday for their roles in post-race incidents at Charlotte Motor Speedway over the weekend. Now, both players have also been placed on a four-race probation. And the MLB playoffs have been just simply spectacular, folks. They've been fun to watch. The Kansas City Royals are one win away from the World Series after defeating the Baltimore Orioles last night 2-1. KC will take on Baltimore this afternoon in Kansas City at 4 p.m. And how about the San Francisco Giants? They took the 2-1 series lead in the NLCS yesterday after edging past the St. Louis Cardinals. 5-4, courtesy of a walk-off error in the 10th inning. Did you see that, folks? Off a bunt. My goodness. Now, St. Louis will try and even the series on the road tonight at 8 p.m. All right, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. for this October 15th, 2014. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, you know the number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at either Al Martin, WKR, or at our official Current Sports Twitter page of WKR_sports. All right. Again, folks, our phone lines will be open this entire hour all the way up until 2 p.m. 517-355-9527 is the number to call. We have a great show in store for you all. I am particularly excited because on the show, it's my favorite day, okay? It is my favorite day. It's Barbershop Wednesday. We try to bring the debate feel to each and every Wednesday here on Current Sports. And today's debate topic centers on fantasy sports, okay? Fantasy sports is a phenomenon that if you're out there listening, I can pretty much bet that, yeah, you have a fantasy team, whether it be football, whether it be baseball, hockey. I'm actually getting my fantasy basketball team started in a few weeks, and I can't wait for it. I'm an avid fantasy sports player. Now, you know, fantasy, you know, it seems as though each and every year is just continuing to become bigger and better. No matter what league you're playing in, it's so fun because, you know, in the leagues that I'm in, I always play amongst my buddies, and it is always friendly competition. A lot of smack talk goes on, and yeah, there's a lot on the line. Usually it's a buy-in, maybe like a $10 buy-in, and usually the winner gets the whole pot at the end of the day. We don't believe in second place in my leagues, I guess. But, you know, it's just fun to play, and, you know, it adds an added interest, a personal interest, each and every Sunday, especially with the NFL, because I love the NFL fantasy leagues because you have 1 week, you don't have to, you know, troll around with your team and change up the lineups and be that aware of it every single day like a league, like a you know, like the NBA fantasy league is or the MLB is. I mean, those games happen every other day just about. And it can be stressful. But with the NFL, you have 1 day a week where you can spend all week prepping, making moves here and there, and it's just fun to play. It can be certainly frustrating. I'm pretty sure many of you out there have had those days, all of you fantasy players out there have had those days where your lineup looks great, your projected points totally outweigh your competitions, but it just happens, you know, on that Sunday or whatever day it is, you know, your players just don't get it done for whatever reasons it is. You know, maybe they get injured, you know, and, you know, who knows what happens. But it's frustrating, but when you win, man, does it feel good. But, you know, the phenomena that is fantasy sports has gotten to a point where it's really starting to get a lot of national talk as far as the legality of playing fantasy sports is concerned. And, you know, I bring it up because, and that's what our Barbershop Wednesday is centered on. Should fantasy sports be considered illegal? Because there are many out there who believe that, yeah, it's kind of getting out of hand now with, you know, 1 week leagues like FanDuel and DraftKings. And not only are they 1 week leagues considering the NFL, but I mean, with FanDuel, you can pretty much play any sport. You know, I was watching a report on DraftKings. DraftKings has a thing where, you know, that, you know, 1 week they had, if you win this week, whoever, you know, has a perfect score or so on and so forth, then you could win $1 million in 1 day off of playing fantasy football. How incredible is that? So it's becoming such a big thing that people are, you know, really not even working. I mean, you know, watching one report, there's even a report of guys who have just quit their jobs and play fantasy football as a full-time gig and get paid, like, you know, and have winnings up to like $1 million, you know, six figures to play fantasy football. I mean, it's unbelievable. So anytime where money like that rocks the boat or seems to tip the scale and kind of push the envelope a little bit, it seems as though the legal system is brought up and gets involved. And there's talks now about, is fantasy sports really legal? Should we put some boundaries on this thing? So we'll discuss it. You'll also get to hear a report done by HBO Sports, a really in-depth report. I thought it was fantastic, done by Carl Quintanilla. Carl did a beautiful job at sort of covering all different angles of this story, talking to guys who, yeah, have quit their jobs and have started to play fantasy football on the regular and are big winners. These are big wigs, guys who go to Vegas and get paid a lot of money based on if they win, of course, through fantasy sports. So you don't want to miss that report. We'll dive into it, and I'm curious to get your thoughts. I'm pretty sure many of you out there play fantasy sports or are a fan of it or know somebody that does. I want to get your thoughts on whether or not it's going too far and should it be considered illegal. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Again, you can also leave us a comment at facebook.com/currentsports or tweet me at AlMartinWKAR or at WKAR_sports. But before we get to that Barbershop Wednesday, that was kind of a nice little tease. We definitely got to talk some tires. And to join me in doing that is the man behind the glass, Alex Shark. How you doing, Alex?
Great, Al. Let's start the Tigers breakdown of what went wrong, man. Too much.
We already know there's a lot that went wrong. But the question here is, I mean, what's going to be done about it in the offseason? And, you know, Tigers GM Dave Dombrowski, he held an hour-long presser concerning the squad. It was the big headline when it comes to Michigan sports around here. And just to talk a little bit about and to play a few bites from that presser, here is Dave on whether or not the window is closing for Detroit to finally get the job done and win a World Series.
We have a good team and we have a good foundation coming back. I mean, for sure, I don't think there's many clubs in baseball that would take their starting four going into our offseason over our starting four that we know we have. So when you look at our situation and you have Price and Sanchez and Verlander, who I think will bounce back, I think he's really driven to bounce back in that core. Injury probably bothered him a little more, particularly for preparation into the year, and you have Porcello. That's a pretty good place to start with those four. For sure, we have Miguel Cabrera back in the middle of our lineup, and we have other guys, too, that are very good. So I think anytime you can start with that core, and then you make adjustments.
So, again, that was Dave Dombrowski, a snippet of his hour-long presser yesterday concerning the Tigers and what offseason moves he's considering and what offseason moves they should make and the state of this team and whether or not the window is closing on this squad. I guess let's start a discussion here because now, you know, Alex, this is a team that, of course, and you and I agreed on this, it was World Series of bust this year. This is a team where expectations were through the roof. They had arguably the best starting pitching rotation in all of baseball. They had arguably, you know, the best lineup in all of baseball. I mean, you got Miguel Cabrera, you got V-Mart, you got J.D. Martinez. I mean, my goodness. I mean, just a stacked lineup. But again, you talked about those problems, the problems like the bullpen, the defensive problems. We could go on and on and on. And it really is an interesting question whether or not the window is now closing on this Tigers team after being swept by Baltimore. A lot of head-scratching moments for this squad. For me, I do believe that the window is narrow. If you look at it, Miguel Cabrera, Torii Hunter, Victor Martinez, Justin Verlander, Anibal Sanchez, those are all players, integral components to this Tigers team that are all at least 30 years old. They aren't getting younger, folks. I believe in baseball compared to pretty much any other sport here. In baseball, if you have a good squad, you have to capitalize on those years more so than any other sport. Baseball, the window is always so narrow to win because we know, I watch the baseball playoffs each and every single season, and there's always one or two teams that seem to turn your head and surprise you that make a crazy run. Baseball playoffs are so unpredictable that when you do have a dominant squad, a perceivingly dominant squad, you have to take advantage of those years. the Detroit Tigers have had that type of squad these past few seasons and have failed each and every time to get the job done to win a World Series. The window is always narrow in baseball, and you do not get many opportunities to win a World Series in this game. So, yeah, I do think the window is closing, and the window is constantly closing year to year to year concerning this Detroit Tigers team.
I disagree, man. I think, yeah, the window is more narrow, but I don't think it's as narrow as you think. Sure, the Tigers are getting older. A lot of their key components, Victor Martinez, Torrey Hunter, probably even retiring, not even sure if he'll be back. But you're talking about Victor Martinez, Justin Verlander. You brought up Anibal Sanchez. He's actually considered younger compared to some of the other guys on this team. But the thing about those guys is that as much as they're still getting older, their productivity is still up. Torrey Hunter, at the age of, what, 38? He's still hitting above 270. He's a career hitter. Victor Martinez, at the age of 35, had the best year of his career. MVP numbers, and still might win MVP. So to go on to say that the window is super, super narrow, that's not, I think, the best definition for it. It's gotten narrower, but I wouldn't say it's as narrow as you think it is.
But Alex, isn't that saying a lot, though? Isn't that saying a lot that you have these guys who are up in age and extremely productive, and you still can't even sniff a World Series? I mean, that's saying a lot to me that you do have this all-star team, yet you still cannot get to that point. That, to me, is so alarming. So alarming, even more alarming to me, because you would think with a team like this, you would go deeper. Now, it was interesting because, you know, you bring up Victor Martinez. We haven't even yet to talk about Max Scherzer, a guy who I think is gone. Here was Dave Dombrowski on the signings of V-Mart and Max Scherzer.
We're not in a position to make those announcements today. This is not an announcement time period. I really can't answer that question at this point because those are, during the postseason, we're not supposed to be talking about things like that. That's more for after the World Series.
So, yeah, that's Dave. Dave was very, I guess you could say, politically correct throughout yesterday's hour-long presser. Very politically correct. He said a lot without saying much, I guess you could say, if that makes any sense to you all out there. But, again, you know, who knows if the Tigers... That should be the top priority to me. Signing Victor Martinez should be the Tigers' top priority in this offseason. A guy who, again, was extremely productive. V-Mart was off the charts this year. He was the guy. He was one of the guys. I mean, coupled with him and Miguel and JD, those three really were consistent guys in that lineup that you can count on. V-Mart, you got to keep him around, I think, especially... which I think is going to happen when you lose a guy like Max Scherzer. Again, Dave is waiting. He's waiting until after the World Series to make any moves here. So if you're looking for a timeline or a deadline where you can expect the Tigers to start shake, rattling, and rolling this roster, you have to wait until the World Series is done. But again, I think re-signing V-Mart has to be a big, big priority here because V-Mart, he was incredible this season. You can't afford to lose a guy like him and take a hit, a jab like that in your lineup, Alex.
Yeah, but that's the thing with V-Mart is if you sign him back, he had his best numbers ever, Al. So as much as he's already getting 12, he's going to want probably at least 15 to max out his career. So as much as he was an integral part and it's important to have him and Scherzer back, you have to fight the whole consequence of, are you willing to cough up another $3 million at least to keep him there?
For V-Mart, yes.
I mean, would you do that, Al?
For Victor Martinez, without a doubt. The man was simply incredible this year, especially if you're going to lose a guy, you know, you're going to lose some pieces here. But you also gain some pieces back here. I think V-Mart was that good. Well, you got to do what it takes, whatever it takes to keep him on this squad. And again, you know, there are a lot of question marks because... You know, I don't think Torrey Hunter's going to be back with the squad. I think Torrey Hunter's gone. I think Max Scherzer is gone. It would really surprise me if those two are back on this roster. And the fact that Max turned down all of that moolah, that was a lot of money. $144 million is a lot of money.
Well, hey,
people.
I'm glad they didn't give it to him. Look how he played in the,
exactly.
in the playoffs.
Exactly. And you know, Dombrowski addressed yesterday, even though he's like, all right, well, I can't speak on that right now. But he did say that, yeah, if Max does test the free agent waters here, it may be pretty unlikely that he'll be back with this team. So I just don't see Max returning. Torrey Hunter is up in age. I mean, he just looked. Looking at that interview when the Tigers were eliminated from the playoffs, I don't know if you saw it, but Torrey Hunter, he was barraged by a lot of reporters. A lot of reporters asking whether or not he'll come back. And Torrey just looked like a beaten man. He looked like a tired man who was like, man, you know, I'm 38 years old. Maybe it's time for me to leave this game. I'm going to talk to my wife about it. But, man, I'm just sick and tired of seemingly getting there and just not getting there, you know. So I don't know if Torrey Hunter be back. That would surprise me a lot. But, again, let's address the problem here. One of the biggest problems, I should say, that we talked about all year. That bullpen. I mean, you know, really looking at it, Joe Nathan, Dombrowski said that Joe Nathan will at least start, as the closer for 2015. But
big words.
Yeah, that's big, right? Joe Nathan will be the starter next year, folks, to start the year. But Dave Dombrowski talked about, hey, you got to perform. This is a performance league. If you don't perform, hey, some moves could be made. Another question mark, will Joaquin Soria be back? Joaquin wasn't great this season for various reasons, I believe. But will he sign back? You know, then you come into question with Jabba Chamberlain. Will he be back? Bruce Rondon will return for the team, which I think, you know, certainly the Tigers were hurt not having Bruce as one of those pitchers this year. There's a lot of question marks for that bullpen, man. And to see what moves are going to be made, a lot of people are going to be looking very, very close. But, you know, Joe Nathan, I just don't know. I don't think Joe will be with this team long. If he plays like he did this year, Joe Nathan won't even get, you know, you won't even get 10 games out of Joe Nathan, I don't think, next year, Alex. But that is surprising to me, that because I thought for sure, you know, he would have been one of the guys that Dave Dombrowski would have been saying, okay, maybe we'll make a move there. But, hey, he came out and said that he will at least start his closer next year. I don't know, that was surprising to me. That was one of the biggest surprises for me out of that whole presser. What were your thoughts on that, Alex?
Yeah, no, that's surprising, especially because with the cap that he's getting and what his numbers were, they don't really match up when you compare him to other major league closers. I mean, look at the top closers in the game. Is he making nearly the production that Rafael Soriano made with Washington? No. Is he making nearly the production that even a guy like Papelbon does? No, of course not. That's the most amazing part of it is the cap that he's still getting for it. It's almost like they don't really have a choice at this point since he's on contract, Al.
Yeah.
Is that as much as he's going to be starting as a closer, yeah, he kind of has to because he's still tied down with this team. I mean, they're not going to drop him. They're not going to want to pay him and then another closer. They're kind of just stuck with him at this point. So for me, Al, this was the best team on paper this year. Statistically, three former Cy Young winners, this was the best team on paper. So will there be a better Tigers team? Probably not. But I think if they deal with the bullpen issues, that might offset it, Al. That might offset all their woes. Because starting pitching-wise wasn't the problem. Starting pitching wasn't the problem. Them losing Max Scherzer, yeah, that hurts. But that wasn't the problem. The Tigers always put up runs when Max Scherzer was pitching. I'm sure they can put up runs for another pitcher like Porcello, like Anibal Sanchez. How many games this year did you see the Tigers go out when Porcello was pitching and he didn't get any help? So many. So I'm not so harping on the Scherzer thing. I'm more harping on what they're going to do with Jim Johnson basically stealing $10 million from the Tigers, Hanrahan with $1 million as a project, Chamberlain and Coke still dangling there on a thread. That's what I'm most surprised with, Al.
Yeah, yeah, those are definitely valid points there. And, you know, looking at, I guess, you know, getting out of the mood of depression here, it is great that the Tigers will get Jose Iglesias back. Who I think is he's the most entertaining shortstop in the game. I mean, I love Jose Iglesias. That's great that he'll be healthy and back. Will Miguel Cabrera have, you know, surgery on that right ankle? That's going to be another question mark there. But we do know Miguel will be back with his team, of course, with that contract. Miguel is a guy who is Mr. Tiger. He is Mr. Tiger. He's been there through thick and thin. He will continue to be there, and I think he will continue to be productive. So you got to harp on that. Dombrowski, you know, called out three areas that he does plan to harp on in this offseason. The three most important areas for Tigers fans that you should be concerned about, at least in the eyes of Dave Dombrowski, are center field, the bullpen, and left-handed bats. Those are the three top priorities concerning Dave Dombrowski that he plans to address in this offseason. Of course, that center field is certainly a question mark because, you know, with the whole Austin Jackson trade, you know, they threw in Rajai Davis. He's not a true center fielder, though. So, they will make a move for a center fielder. They look to make some moves to beef up the bullpen and also to bring some left-handed bats to the lineup. As far as Brad Ausmus is concerned, there are many out there who blamed Brad Ausmus for many questionable moves, not only in the playoffs, but throughout this season. Here's Dombrowski on Ausmus and for those who blamed Ausmus for their woes.
We scored one run in the third game. We didn't score enough runs that particular day. We didn't have dominant starting pitching like we did last year in the first couple games of the world's of the postseason. We didn't have that this year. We had solid pitching, but not dominant like we did. So there's a lot of reasons why you don't win a particular time period. I don't think it's a fair criticism to put it on the manager in that regard. I think it's, again, there's many reasons why you particularly lose. I remember people having been through this were pretty much up in arms with Jim Leland all the time, too, at the same time period when things didn't work at a particular time, and you're talking about one of the best managers in baseball history. So,
yeah, that's Dave Dombrowski on the many Tigers fans who considerably blamed Brad Ausmus for the Tigers not getting deep into the playoffs and for their multiple losses throughout the year. I think that Brad deserves some blame here. As far as Brad coming back as manager, what do you think about Alex on giving him another year? Were you surprised at that? Because for me, I could have seen it going either way here. Now, granted, Brad Ausmus came into a situation where he was thrown right into the gauntlet. I mean, he's thrown into a situation where you have to win a World Series or this season is a disappointment. To come into a situation like that as a first-year manager, man, that's tough. That's a tall order.
Yeah, that is.
That is definitely a tall order. And Brad admitted, yes, there were multiple mistakes made throughout this season. But as a first-year manager, are you really surprised? You know, for me, looking back at it, it's one of those things where how much leeway on that leash do you give Brad this season? Or did you give Brad this season, Alex? Because I did give him a little bit, considering the fact that, yeah, this is a first-year manager coming into an expectation that is pretty high.
Yeah, it's hard to give him leeway because you've seen first-year managers maybe outside of baseball. And no matter what sport you're in, Al, even Eric Spoelstra from the Heat in his first year, he made plenty of mistakes. I'd even say more than Ausmus made.
But that's different, though.
I know. But I'm saying
that's a different sport.
Mistakes, the point is, mistakes are expected for a first-year manager. Sure, mm-hmm. You wouldn't have liked those in the playoffs, maybe preferably in the season, which overall in the season, sure, there were mistakes, but people are harping on them mainly for the playoff mistakes. Is that true? Mainly for the playoff mistakes.
I think it's a combination of both.
I mean, what else do you blame for a year aside from the playoffs?
Because looking at that whole 9-20 stretch as well, I mean, there were some decisions throughout that stretch that were like, okay, can you tweak the lineup here a little bit, Brad? I mean, what's going on here? You know, he was getting bashed for that during that whole stretch. So throughout the season, he was being criticized too. I mean, it was a multitude. I mean, and Brad admitted, I mean, he said that he learned a lot this season. There were multiple situations and moments in this throughout this season where he'll look back and look at him as learning situations for him because he's never been involved in situations like that. But when you come into a situation, and there's the other side of this too that says, Brad, you knew what you were getting yourself into. You knew that you were inheriting a team that you had to take to the World Series and win it. And if you didn't, yeah, you might be on the hot seat. He knew what he was getting into when he signed that contract. And as Tigers fans, I think it's justifiable to hold him to that standard. As a first-year manager, though, it all depends on how much weight you put on it. For me, I could have seen it going both ways. I say give him another year. Give him another year, see what he can do. If it is totally just a run-of-a-muck of a type of season, then hey, yeah, I guess call for his head, I guess, huh?
Yeah, and that's the thing is, yeah, the point he brought up, that Dombrowski brought up, was that people were harping on Jim Leland. There's always going to be arguments about managing. Overall, Al, I think that it was actually less criticism compared to Leland overall.
You think so? Yeah.
I think so. Do you agree?
Yeah, there were times when Leland would just get bashed left and right, man.
I mean,
yeah.
For the most part, Brad Ausmus was more aggressive on the base paths, didn't get much criticism on taking out pitchers, which was a big Leland thing, on pulling, taking out relief pitchers at certain times.
Mm.
The last thing that Brad Ausmus did, I think, a lot better than Leland overall, was he was really good at kind of sticking with his guys. I know you said that people were harping on him for tweaking the lineup a little bit, but during that 9-20 stretch and when they weren't winning games, when Jim Leland was manager, he would throw guys in, throw guys out, but Ausmus stuck with a lot of his guys.
But I think that was part of Ausmus's downfall, though, Alex. I think, especially when it concerns that whole bullpen situation, I mean, he didn't, I don't know if he trusted his players. Well, he trusted his players too much, I think.
But with the bullpen situation,
he just kept going with the same formula over and over and over and over.
I see where you're going. I see where you're going. But the problem with the bullpen is there was a reason why Dombrowski acquired Jim Johnson and Hanrahan and made a move for Soria. Brett Ausmus didn't have any options. Those were the cards he was dealt with. There was no other options he could have made, in my eyes. Yeah, the playoff, you could have pitched Albuquerque. Sure, you didn't have to take out Anibal when he was in the bullpen. But overall in the season, it was a crapshoot, man.
Yeah. Well, that's a different way of looking at it. Folks, if you want to call in, 517-355-9527, and give your thoughts on the state of the Tigers, what should the Detroit Tigers do this offseason? 517-355-9527. Let's shift gears really quickly, and let's talk about Jameis Winston, Alex. For those of you that don't know, Florida State coach Jimbo Fisher said the university has spoken with the company that has authenticated more than 950 items with Jameis Winston's signature and is confident that Winston did not receive money in exchange for autographing memorabilia. Now, on Monday, ESPN reported that Florida State Compliance was looking into how many Winston autographs were authenticated by James Spence Authentication. So basically, Jimbo Fisher is sticking with his guns and saying that, yeah, I've talked with Jameis, I've contacted, you know, this company, and I do believe that Jameis Winston did not profit off of autographs. And this is a very topical conversation happening at this point because JSA was the authenticator that certified more than 500 autographs by Georgia running back Todd Gurley, who last week was suspended by Georgia while the school investigates. This is a hot button topic because, I mean, I'm just going to be plain honest with you guys out there. This is just another headache in the Jameis Winston saga. Now, granted, this thing could pan out and it could come out that Jameis Winston did not sign autographs for profit. It could come out and he could be totally innocent of this whole thing. But the fact that he is linked to this, I mean, when will it end?
Right.
Will it end?
What it comes down to, it's the fact that he's linked to another off-the-field issue.
Exactly. I mean, how many times must we have Jameis Winston in our current sports quick hit headliners about some off-the-field garbage?
He's used to denying.
Exactly. I mean, it gets so, my goodness. I mean, and but this is the big thing about this whole spectrum when it comes to Jameis Winston, though. The kid has never been held accountable for any of the instances, for any of the off-the-field, quote-unquote, trouble that he has been involved in. Again, I gave the analogy. You know, if my dog, who I love to death, if my dog keeps doing her mess on my carpet and I just clean it up and don't reprimand her.
Don't bring up the dog.
You know what she's going to do? But you know what my dog is going to do if I don't punish her? What is she going to do, Alex? He's just going to keep doing it over and over on my carpet. If you keep letting Jameis Winston get away, quote unquote, with the things that he's doing, he's just going to keep doing them.
But Al, the thing with the autographs is this was before the crap. I mean, these autographs were signed a while ago.
I don't care when it happened. It's still another storyline to his off-the-field troubles. It kind of gets lumped into this whole thing. Now to talk about the act of players signing autographs for profit, I think it's pretty much safe to say that this is just going to keep on happening, Alex. I mean, how many times have we seen this happen? Going back to last year when we talked about, you know, Johnny Football being involved in his whole thing with autographs.
Terrell Pryor
is another player. I mean, Todd Gurley. You know, it's going to keep happening because, honestly, college athletes out there feel as though they need some type of compensation. They feel as though they're broke. They're busting their you-know-whats out on the gridiron or the court left and right. And they believe that, yeah, they want a piece of the pie. There's been countless stories done on this. Players, college athletes are going to continue. This is going to continue to be a thing that's going to happen. How the NCAA combats this is going to be very interesting because if I had a solution to it, trust, I won't be sitting in this chair talking to you through the airwaves right now, okay? Now, to go into our first break, Alex, with everything that Jameis is going through, he is certainly a talented football player on the gridiron. Would you want Jameis Winston if you're an NFL GM, would you want Jameis Winston as your quarterback? Yes or no?
No, I mean, absolutely not. You've seen it with other NFL players going to the draft with off-the-field issues. The NFL, more than any other sport, weighs off-the-field issues and little intangibles more than any other sport, I would argue, Al. So, overall, no, I would not want Jameis Winston. But I have to bring this up because we haven't talked about this yet with Jameis. Did you see the quotes from Jimbo Fisher regarding it?
Yeah, I did. I'm looking at him right now.
I'm going to read a quick thing for the listeners.
Go ahead.
For the listeners, real quick. This is according to head coach of Florida State, Jimbo Fisher. He said, quote, "Kids sign things all the time. So what do you want them to do? Stop signing stuff? We could make them not have any fans from that standpoint and not sign for anybody. That's what is going to come to, and that's a shame for college football. That somebody exploits a kid. Now, if they're getting paid for it, I don't have knowledge of that. I don't believe Jameis did." Overall, Al, Jimbo Fisher,
he seems kind of delusional, doesn't he?
Not only a little delusional, but yeah, like it sounds like he has no idea about the consequences of signing autographs and the past situations from it. But it seems like no matter what, he has no knowledge of the situation with Jameis.
Well, for me, it seems as though when you read those quotes, I mean, when I first read them, it initially seems to me like Jimbo Fisher believes Jameis Winston can do no wrong.
Right.
And it seems to me that no matter what Jameis does in the past, Florida State is going to stick by their guy and vouch for him. How can Jimbo Fisher really and truly believe Jameis Winston didn't sign autographs for Moolah if, one, he wasn't present when Jameis did this, and two, considering the crazy past that Jameis has had off the field, I just don't understand it. I mean, he voiced confidence that Jameis Winston didn't violate these NCAA rules, but I don't know how he can come out and publicly vouch for his quarterback. I just didn't understand why he even decided to do that in the first place. I don't know. Interesting stuff, folks. Again, if you want to weigh in on any of this, 517-355-9527. When we come back, we're going to dive into our Barbershop Wednesday topic. It's going to be a good one, folks. Should fantasy sports be considered illegal? Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Happy Hump Day, folks. Yes, it is Wednesday, October 15th. Hey, just get over the hump, and then, hey, two more days until the weekend begins, okay? Keep at it. You can do it, all right? And Alex Sharp likes to call it a World Wednesday. We play music from all around the world. Alex, where was that little shindig from?
That's a little Ricky Martin for you.
Ricky Martin. Yeah, I have not heard
Flash from the past.
The name Ricky Martin. I don't know how long. Where's Ricky from again? Where was Ricky from?
I don't know his exact origin.
Was it Italy? I could be totally wrong. Oh, Canada? Was it Canada?
No, something in Southern American.
Was it? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Ricky Martin. He's still making music, huh? My goodness. All right. Well, there you go. World Wednesday, where we play music from all around the world. There is some Ricky Martin for you. All right. Let's get away from Ricky Martin. Let's go into some Barbershop Wednesday, okay, folks? Barbershop Wednesday today, folks. Should fantasy sports be considered illegal?
Well, I mean, we can't talk straight in the barbershop. Then where can we talk straight? We can't talk straight nowhere else. You know, this ain't nothing but a healthy conversation.
Yes, healthy conversation, folks. Thanks a lot, Cedric. Yes, Barbershop Wednesday today focuses on should fantasy sports, be considered illegal. Now, fantasy sports is something I'm sure many of you indulge in. It's fun. Let's be honest here. I have about, one, two, three, four leagues that I'm in, okay? Yes, you know, two or three of those leagues are for moolah. You know, it's like a $10 buy-in, and the winner at the end of the season gets all of the moolah. It's fun. It is definitely fun. It really adds more added incentive to watch the games, not just watch the Lions every Sunday or my Cowboys. But, you know, it's something that many people, considering how big fantasy sports are becoming year after year after year, people feel as though maybe this is a bit illegal. I don't know. There's a lot of money involved with it. Now, there was an unbelievable report done by HBO Sports. The reporter's name is Carl Quintanilla. Carl went out to Vegas, talked to some of the big wigs in fantasy sports, and I tell you what, some of the moolah that some of these players have won and are winning, and that they, you know, on a daily basis is truly remarkable. Just take a listen at some of Carl's report.
We followed the money to Las Vegas and the FanDuel Daily Fantasy Baseball Championship.
Baby, you gotta love it.
The one-night contest with the $1 million grand prize.
Welcome to the Thunderdome.
Thank you.
You ready for this?
Yeah, we're ready.
Corey Albertson and many other top daily fantasy pros had played their way into the tournament, as did Tommy Galati, who told us he makes close to six figures a year playing daily fantasy on the side.
I'm a day trader, so you're just day trading athletes rather than day trading, you know, individual stocks
right.
And companies. The charting's the same. You know, it's the same premises, same concepts, a lot of data, a lot of analytics.
We also met John Zellers, who says last year he made $700,000 playing daily fantasy full-time.
Daily fantasy is very unpredictable, and I've been on enough to make a living off it, and that's great, and sometimes I'm off, and that sucks.
Yeah, I bet it does, playing for that much moolah. Again, that is a report done by HBO Sports, Carl Quintanilla. It's a very... very interesting report. Carl does a great job of covering all his bases and really attacks it from various angles. Now, looking at this report, Alex, the question was certainly brought up whether or not this is illegal. Now, first off, I thought it's very interesting because in many cases, if you look at just the logistics of fantasy football, it's entirely legal under federal law. And I want to bring up 3 points here. The Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act of 2006 includes an explicit carve-out for fantasy sports games that have to meet three criteria. Now, if you equate these three attributes to fantasy football or fantasy sports in general, yeah, it's entirely legal, folks. The first one, Alex, is the value of the prizes is not determined by the number of participants or the amount of fees paid. So, if it meets that one, check. Number two, all winning outcomes reflect the relative knowledge and skill of the participants. It's pretty much solid. I mean, if you know what you're doing, if you know what you're talking about, if you know your players, know the game, then yeah, you know, all you know, it reflects that. The winnings reflect that. You know, the winning outcomes, I should say. And three, the fantasy games result is not based on the final scores of any real-world games. Now, based on that language, and looking at that again, it's not based on whether or not the St. Louis Rams beat, you know, the Dallas Cowboys. It's based on an athlete's one-on-one performance when it comes to fantasy sports. Now, based on that language, most traditional versions of fantasy football seem to comply with federal law. I think when bringing this discussion to the table, and the reason why this discussion is getting a lot of headway, has to do with the amount of moolah that is now involved and is changing on a daily basis. It seems as though it's becoming bigger and bigger on a daily basis. The reason why this conversation is coming to the forefront is because there's a lot of money involved in it now. I mean, as you just heard, you got some players who don't even have a job. They are glued to their laptops with about 10 or 12 fantasy teams, money spread left and right, and are getting paid sometimes if they win up to six figures on the daily? Anytime you see numbers like that, you better believe that federal law is going to take a side eye and say, okay, is this really legal?
Yeah, Wolf of Wall Street isn't working here.
Yeah, exactly. I'm telling you, man. But looking at the criteria, as I just ran down, again, the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act of 2006 states that, yeah, this is perfectly fine and legal. What do you think about it?
It's a big topic, man. It's like we're federal law or something.
I'm telling you, it's tough.
Man, well, I kind of look at this like any other gambling. Like you said, does it reflect the knowledge? You kind of gave your requirements needed for it. But for me, when you look at state by state, when it comes to Indian gambling, when it comes to racetracks, when it comes to commercial gambling, like Motor City Casino, it's different by state. And for something like this, just like sports betting, I think you have to do the same thing. I mean, there are so many similarities here, but I know this is more online and it's more, you're not necessarily pulling a slot or anything and you don't have a physical kind of contribution to it. But at the end of the day, you still kind of have to follow this like every other state's rule. I mean, look at Michigan, Iowa, Colorado. They allow all types of gamblings. And Louisiana, those are the big four. They allow all types of gamblings for each of those states. I think the same thing has to happen with sports gambling, where it goes through a judicial process, has some kind
of... But should it be outlawed? I don't think it should. I think fantasy sports is a recreational activity that it's fun and it's based on chance. That's the big thing here. No one knows how Adrian Peterson... Well, that's a bad example. I want to bring up Adrian Peterson. How DeMarco Murray is going to perform against a certain team. You can make an educated opinion or a guess upon it, depending on the type of defense he's going against or and so on and so forth. But it's impossible for you to have an upper hand, legitimately have an upper hand, at knowing exactly what's going to happen on a game-to-game right. basis. It's based on chance, which is a big reason why fantasy sports are legal. You know what I mean? Because, you know, it's a total crapshoot. You don't know the outcome here. If you knew the outcome, if you were somebody from the future who knew what was going to happen or something like that, or somehow knew that a player was going to throw a game, if there was some point shaving going on, right. you know, then that's when it crosses the line, I think. But with fantasy sports, you're just playing, hoping for the best outcome. It's totally based on chance. Therefore, it should be totally legal. And I think people are kind of going crazy about it.
I hear you, man. But the reason why I think having it illegal has some sort of basis behind it is because of, look at any other gambling. If you're playing a slot, it's mechanical. It's computerized. You're playing poker. You're playing three decks when you go to a casino. Mm-hmm. So to come on with this issue and say that it's kind of up for anybody to do, it's kind of saying, like, I can get together with seven friends and play a poker game with no dealer and no third deck. It's kind of illegal and unfair. So I think the reason why people are pushing for the illegality is because there's no way to monitor it. And like you said, with point shaving, with corruption behind sports like we've seen even recently, you never really know. And this is a way where state by state's governments, they don't have enough control of athletics to do it.
Right.
So that's
right.
why, if it's up to me, I think that it depends on the state because there's so much unorganized at this point in time with it. It's kind of free up in the air. Like they said in the interview, you can go ahead with Ryan Gumbel in Real Sports. This guy, Carl Quintanilla, said he can go and start a fantasy sports site himself. There's no regulation of it.
No, it's not. And, you know, another part to this whole thing when it comes to FanDuel is that FanDuel, folks, it's a site where you go on, you can create these leagues, and there's many people that play on it. Actually, my fraternity brother, Brandon, he plays on it all the time. And, you know, in one Sunday, he took home $250. A $25 buy-in for the league, he takes home $250. I mean, that's unbelievable to me. I mean, I'm sitting there like, wow, you got to be kidding me. So it's quick money. It's money that's so insurmountable. And coupled with the fact that, you know, pretty much anybody can do it. I mean, if you have a valid credit card, you can go on FanDuel right now and play for big bucks. Anytime you have that amount of money, yeah, you better believe it's going to rock the boat. What are your thoughts on it? Should it be illegal? 517-355-9527. Go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Even tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR_sports. What do you think about fantasy sports and should they be illegal? Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show by talking about the Ryder Cup, the task force that is being put together to combat a few things. Also, Ziggy Ansah being named Defensive Player of the Week. All of that, we'll wrap up the show for you. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
I'm John Moe. This week on Wits, actor Colin Hanks of the Emmy-winning TV series Fargo tries to convince kids that math is awesome. It doesn't go well.
What do you think is the coolest thing there is?
Well, cigarettes.
It's got to be cigarettes.
Definitely smoke.
No!
Poor math. Plus music from Father John Misty.
Jesus. Saturdays at 1 and Sundays at noon on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, our current sports question of the week, should fantasy sports be illegal? We just finished up our Barbershop Wednesday on that topic. Again, go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR _sports. I would love to get your thoughts on it. I will read your thoughts here live on the air. All right. Well, it's a transition now. We have about 9 minutes left in the show. Our Detroit Lions expert, I should say. I want to dub him as that. Jock DeWitt. Jock, how you doing, my man?
What's going on, Al?
I'm doing very well. I can't complain, brother. Now, you know, some big news concerning one of the Detroit Lions defensive players, Ziggy Ansah. How good was Ziggy on Sunday, folks? I mean, Ziggy, he was everywhere. He was named, actually, the NFC Defensive Player of the Week this morning. Ziggy was great. What are your thoughts on Ziggy Ansah, Jack?
Well, he's only been playing football for a few years, and just the improvement he's shown since he came into the league as a rookie. He only had 2.5 sacks and a forced fumble last week. It's pretty good stats right there. That doesn't include the tackles or the quarterback hurries or anything like that. So he's been great. He's been a big surprise, from me at least, all year.
Yeah, he has. Ziggy was certainly very, very impressive. And you know what? That entire Lions defense overall has been impressive. This is actually the second time in 6 weeks that a Detroit Lion has won the NFC Defensive Player of the Week award. If you remember, linebacker DeAndre Levy won the award in week one to start off the season. So, you know, now looking at this matchup, I'm curious to get your thoughts, Jock, because you have a matchup this Sunday where the Detroit Lions go against the pick that I actually had winning the entire enchilada before the season started in the New Orleans Saints. Yeah, I may be regretting that just a little bit, but I'm sticking with my guns. It's still early. It's only, you know, going into week 7 now. But looking at, you know, the New Orleans Saints, you have the second most prolific offense in the league going against the number one defense in the league. Can the Lions sustain this defensive dominance week to week to week, or you think does it end on Sunday? What do you think?
No, it doesn't end on Sunday, and I believe Jimmy Graham is either out or he's doubtful for this game, and that's going to impact that game a lot. I don't think they have the receivers that can beat Darius Slay and Rasheen Mathis on the outside. The linebackers do a good job on the tight ends as it is, so if they're out Jimmy Graham, I think the Lions defense could hold Drew Brees probably to 200 passing yards, hopefully force a couple turnovers, and maybe one touchdown, so they allow 10 points on the day. That's my prediction.
Now, you know, Alex and I got into a pretty heated debate on the show yesterday, Jack. I argued with Alex that looking at the next two opponents. Now, it's being said that Megatron won't be back until about week 10.
Right.
You know, when they play the Dolphins, I believe. They're going to play, I believe it's what, you know, they got the Saints this week. Next week, they play the Falcons. They hit a bye. Then, of course, they play the Dolphins after that. So, the Falcons, the Saints, Falcons, bye, Dolphins. So, for me, I believe that they don't need, folks. It's a luxury to have the man. It's certainly a luxury to have Megatron. But they don't need Megatron to beat the Saints and Falcons before that bye. What are your thoughts on that? What are your thoughts about Megatron being out? Is this the right time to continue to sit him and rest him to prevent further injury?
Yeah, because in the long term, you want to make the playoffs, and what's better, having him 80% for the whole season or sitting him out a couple games, let him get healthy, and, you know, trying to beat these couple teams that they're two winnable games. So I think that sitting him right now is a great idea. You get him back after the bye week. Hopefully he comes back 100% and he can help the team win down the stretch.
Do you think they'll beat the Saints and Falcons?
I think they beat the Saints 21-10. They don't score a lot of points, but they score enough to win. And then that game in London will be interesting. You get a 9:30 local start time.
9:30 p.m.?
No, 9:30
a.m. Oh, I got to get up early for that
game? Yeah, you got to get up early for that, L, if you want to watch him.
I'm still dreaming. I'm in dreamland, still dreaming about Rihanna during that time, man. So, I have to get my coffee on that game. But, okay, so you think they do pull out those two wins, though?
Yeah, I think they're two winnable games. They definitely beat the Saints at home, and the Falcons in London should be a winnable game as well.
I think so as well. I think the Lions go 2-0 before they hit the bye. Folks, what do you think? Again, go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. And tweet us at LMartinWKR or at WKR_sports. I want to remind you all before we hit the air, hit off the air, I should say, that Current Sports TV, it's going to be the debut episode of the Jemele Hill sit down that I had a few weeks ago as Jemele was in town, of course, for homecoming, being named the MSU Homecoming Grand Marshal. You can catch that sit down tomorrow night, Thursday night at 10 p.m. on WKAR TV. Do not miss it. If you want to catch any episode that we've done in Current Sports TV history, just simply visit video.wkar.org to enjoy all of that. Tomorrow night's episode will also feature, post-game report concerning the MSU and Purdue game on Saturday. You'll also get to see highlights of the CAAC White Football Championship in high school football between the Lansing Catholic Cougars against the Williamston Hornets. It was a great game that kind of, at first it was close. Then you had Lansing Catholic kind of pull off just a kind of a blowout victory in that second half. You get to see highlights and post-game reaction from that and so much more. Don't miss it. I sit down with Jemele Hill again tomorrow on Current Sports TV at 10 p.m. on WKR TV. You don't want to miss that, folks. And tomorrow, we didn't get to it today, but we want to bring up, the Ryder Cup. Yes, the Ryder Cup, folks. It's a team that hasn't won in quite some time. For those of you who don't know what the Ryder Cup is, it's basically the Olympics of golf. It's when all these different countries compete for the gold, silver, and bronze crown. And I tell you what, the U.S. Ryder Cup team, they have not fared well. Just to give you some quick stats as a prelude, I guess, to our discussion for tomorrow, the U.S. has lost six of the last seven Ryder Cups to none other than Europe. Europe has completely dominated as of recent years, folks. The last time the U.S. of A. has won was 2008, and prior to that, you got to go back to the 90s, 1999. Europe certainly has outstanding talent on their respective squads, considerably considering this year. This year, they actually had four of the top five players in the world. Can you believe that? In the world, folks. Four of the top five were, from Europe. And they also had three of the four 2014 major champs in Rory McIlroy and Martin Keimer. So, what do you think about the Ryder Cup Task Force? Is it needed? It's including players like, once dominant Tiger Woods. You got Phil Mickelson also a part of that squad, including other captains of Ryder Cup history. So, what are your thoughts on the U.S. kind of going to extreme measures now to try and figure out what in the world is wrong with American golf? And I tell you what, folks, just to give you kind of an interesting opinion from my perspective, I think this says a lot about the state of golf in America today. We talked last month how golf, it seemed as though each and every month, not even each and every year here, the time span is becoming shorter and shorter for the American interest in the game of golf. Did you know that In every 48 hours, a golf course closes somewhere here in America? Every 3 days this happens. Well, every 2 days, this happens. Every 2 days, an American golf course closes. Crazy stuff. That says a lot about where we are today. All right, folks. Well, that wraps up today's Current Sports. I want to give a heartfelt thanks to all of you for tuning in to today's show. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care, have one fantastic hump day, and hey, be easy, people.